Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
We begin with...
Here's John Williams.
A bright side. It's 1:08. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Hi, it's John Williams here, weekdays 1 to 3. Saturdays 10 to noon on social media, WGN King John. WGN King John. Look for me on Insta, Twitter, and Facebook. The bright side today that we start the show with is that on Fridays when we do our bright side at 2:40, are you new to the show or that segment? Where will you be on Friday at 2:40? We ask our listeners, we ask you to call in or text and tell us what's some good news in your world, why you're smiling. And it can be something as simple as the snow is melting, or I just found a favorite new TV show, or, you know, my grandson beat cancer. I mean, whatever it is that's making you smile. And that's your assignment every day, by the way. If you don't have a bright side, and literally when we all do this segment, I say, okay, what's your bright side? And some of us go, ah, geez, I don't know. I don't have a... Well, then do that every day. Force yourself to think of something in your world that is or that you can make positive. That's the charge of our Friday show. So now, our friends at the Joint Relief Institute, one of our sponsors, got on board. And we have made pins, Bright Side of Life pins. They're really beautiful, sunny, bright side pins. And we're going to randomly award them to people that text or post or call in. So on my Facebook page, you can see the Bright Side pin, and everybody's filing in. We have a whole list of bright sides. And what is today? Wednesday. So we'll read from some of them on Friday. You can call or text in on Friday. But know that right now you can get a dose of good news, and we'll randomly select from one of those or two of those or three of those Facebook posts, and we'll give you the pins too. Sounds like a good deal, huh? So if you need to cheer yourself up a little bit, and I don't know why you would on a beautiful day like this, but if you do want something bright and sunny in your world, on Facebook, I'm WGN King John. There's the Bright Side new pin. I think those are pretty cool and would be perfect. And in fact, when we award them, am I right about this, Aleph? No, cover me.
Okay.
We're going to give you two, one for you and then one to share with a friend. I think that's the deal. If not, it should be. But here's the deal. This may be true. My estimated probability on this is now 57%. But here's the thing. If you do get two pins, the idea would be you keep and wear one. And then when somebody goes, oh, what's that bright side pin? You go, well, it's for some good news in the world that made me smile. And you share that with them and then you give them the extra pin and you say, hey, what's your bright side? And we'll spread it on. All of that at WGN, at my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John. And we'll read from some of them today. It's not Friday. It's not when we do that segment. But I'm telling you today so that you can get in and maybe win one of the pins.
Well, I think we both know I think we both know the bright side of one particular person's
day. Oh, okay. There's the segue. Ariana Grande's having a bright side. Hey,
oh,
Ariana.
No, I was thinking of...
Who?
Yeah, Ariana Grande.
No, that's not who you're thinking.
That was totally who I was thinking
of. You were thinking of Ariana
yes.
Grande. Okay, so Ariana Grande has got the number 1, 2, and 3 songs on the Billboard Hot 100 chart. Drake almost did this. He was 1, 2, and 4. God's Plan was number 4. It never broke into the top 3. So while Drake had a nice run recently, he hasn't done what the Beatles did in 1964, and that is have the 1, 2, and 3 song. In fact, the Beatles had the 5th, the 4th, the 3rd, the 2nd, and the 1st. They had the top 5 songs on the Hot 100 in 1964 in the spring. Do you know which songs were on the list?
Come on, come on, come on.
This is number 5.
Come on, come on.
Please Please Me, number 5.
And I say that something.
Number 4.
I want to hold your hand.
How much fun is that one, right?
I want to hold your hand. I want to hold your hand.
Here comes number 3.
She loves you, and you know you should be glad.
The ooh is the best part of that song, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, She Loves You, number three. Number two is...
Twist and shout, twist and shout. No, 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 say it all.
Here comes number one.
And I'll be satisfied. Tell me that you want the kind of thing the money just can't buy. I don't care too much for money. Money can buy me love.
Okay, so that's 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. You got the Beatles, Please Please Me. I Want to Hold Your Hand. She Loves You, Twist and Shout. Can't Buy Me Love. Any of those jump out at you as your favorite? Ones that you go, okay, now that's my song.
I really like I Want to Hold Your Hand.
It's funny, though, because when I think of the Beatles, I think of the two kinds of Beatles, the psychedelic or the thoughtful or the angry or the ones that are a little deeper than I Want to Hold Your Hand and Let's Twist and Shout and She Loves You and stuff like that. I mean, these are just, these songs are short, they're not deep, they're fun, they're fast, and they hold up. Will they be saying that years from now about Ariana Grande?
Look what you taught me.
This is number three, right? What are we listening to here?
Thank You Next.
Thank you next. I'm so grateful for my ex. Thank you next. Thank you next.
Best title of all time. Break up with your girlfriend because I'm bored. This is number one, Seven Rings. I'll say this about the Beatles and Ariana Grande. Once they find a groove, they're good at it, right? So the Beatles, all five of those songs sounded like kind of each other. And I would say the same about Seven Rings, Break Up With Your Girlfriend, I'm Bored, and Thank You Next, which is the title track from that album. So she's one, two, and three.
I really want to know who that song is about, though.
Break Up With Your Girlfriend, I'm Bored?
Yeah, but then once you watch the music video, it makes you think, oh, it's just
some... generic, yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas Thank You Next, I think we have a sense of who that was about. Was that about Pete Davidson specifically?
He's one of them. She has a number of subjects in that song.
Oh, I see. So Thank You Next, which coincided with nearly their breakup and some of his emotional problems. That was a coincidence. You don't think that was about Pete Davidson, right?
Oh, he's definitely, his name is in the song.
Yeah.
She says something Pete.
Yeah. Then Break Up With Your Girlfriend, I'm Bored. That's a very good title. That's a very good title. And then Seven Rings is kind of fun. So that's 3, 2, and 1 on the Hot 100 charts. Of all of the songs that we've mentioned, though, the one that I like the most is God's Plan by Drake. And that isn't even in the conversation because it's what kept him from getting the award. That is being in the top three at the same time on the Billboard Hot 100. That would be my favorite of all of those songs. But to be honest with you, I'm not real good at this, right? I wasn't a big Beatles fan. I was a little too young when the Beatles were hip. And I'm a little too old when Ariana Grande and Drake and some of those people are. So somewhere in between them is Styx.
Yeah, what happened? I mean,
is the 1970s. Yeah, yeah, that's it. Everybody that says the 80s sucked, the 70s sucked, it was terrible music, whatever the era is, they did not. Those are the songs of our youth. They worked. They were awesome. The question is, do they really hold up that well? You know, do they travel? And the Beatles do. I don't know if Drake or Ariana Grande will. I don't think Styx has. But that's okay. It doesn't have to be. You know, you're only 16 once, and that's your music then.
Wait.
And if people don't like it 40 years from now, that's okay. You're not 16 anymore.
I thought you were using Styx as a metaphor. Did the band Styx make it at some point, like in the top 10 in the way that Drake did?
No, they weren't that big. But
they would have had a couple of top 10 hits.
They were the rock and roll band. They were one of the big bands of my youth. But were they as, did they dominate the charts the way we're talking right now?
The Grand Delusion, that album?
Producer Aleph, what was the number one song by Styx? Give me their top three, please. We'll get back to you on that. You were in high school, Steve. What was your band? What was the Steve Bertrand band? If I came to Steve's house to go upstairs and listen to records.
I remember Snowstorm, where we listened to the Grand Illusion by Styx over and over and over and over. Come Sail Away.
Yeah. I'm sailing away.
Please. Don't do that.
I would say Songs in the Key of Life was a real big one for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, okay.
The double album. I mean, every song on that was good. Asia and...
Yeah, I had that one too, Steve. We had all the same albums, right.
Producer Elif, what was the number one song or the biggest hit or whatever it was I asked for from Styx, please?
Babe.
Was that number one? What was and Babe ranked where, Producer Elif? Producer Elif is evidently looking for the answer to that now.
System malfunction.
No kidding, Sherlock.
No, it was number one.
It was number one, Babe. Yeah. Yeah. All right, let's get a little of that too, will you? Just pull that up and find that for us.
Calculating.
By the way, in other news, Heidi Stevens. I didn't see this in the newspaper today. I do see it online. Have you guys seen this story about the Kenosha High School that has now attracted the attention of the American Civil Liberties Union? They want the cheerleading coach at a high school in Wisconsin, Tremper High School, punished because, well, I'll just read from her column. A cheerleading squad at a Kenosha High School has attracted the American Civil Liberty Union's attention after a parent complained that the girls were being given big booby and big booty awards by their coaches in 2018 in real life. Not a Seth MacFarlane movie. Heidi Stevens has taken to writing her columns like almost Twitter blasts. At last year's annual banquet for the Tremper High School cheerleaders, according to the New York Times, coaches handed out some eye-popping awards. There was the Big Booby Award for the girl with the biggest breasts, the Times reports. The coach giving the award, according to several parents among the 100 people in attendance, made a joke that the girl risked a concussion when she ran because of her enormous boobs. There was a Big Booty Award for another girl in a video from the event held at a local catering hall. The coach presenting the award said, "We love her butt. Everybody loves her butt." The String Bean Award went to a freshman who, as the Tremper cheerleading coach Patty Utek later told school administrators, was so light and skinny. This year's awards banquet is in March. Parents are not invited this year. On Tuesday, the ACLU tweeted that it's on the case. Breaking: Kenosha Unified School District is on notice. Our demand letter exposes their pervasive sex discrimination, including Tremper High School's cheerleading banquet objectifying girls' bodies. The ACLU wants the district to discipline the coaches who handed out the awards and mandate anti-harassment training for all district employees. Something like that should happen. I cannot believe that. I said to Producer Elif, is the coach male or female? She said, well, that wouldn't be a female. She looked it up and... obviously, the coach is a female. It was a female that handed out these awards that we're just now hearing about. It's pretty crazy. Also pretty crazy, and that's not the right word, but kind of, I need to sort of understand a few of the details here. And this is about the city of Chicago's Obama Center that's going to be put in where Jackson Park is right now.
Maybe.
So there's a lawsuit for plaintiffs, and they're saying, no, we don't want it there, and it can't be there. And the judge has said he'll allow the suit to go forward. The plaintiff in that case joins us next. On a phone line, Charlotte Edelman, plaintiff who initiated that lawsuit against the city of Chicago and the construction of the Obama Presidential Center in Jackson Park. Charlotte, it's John Williams. You're on WGN. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. There's four groups that are involved in this suit. Are you? You're one of the plaintiffs. Is that correct?
Yes, I am an individual plaintiff.
All by yourself. You are not a group. You're just
right.
Charlotte.
I am just Charlotte.
Why are you fighting this? Why are you doing this, Charlotte?
But I do want to say, Protect Our Parks is a plaintiff, and there are also two other individual plaintiffs. There are four, you might say, entities if you include humans as entities. Why am I doing this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's a good question. The reason I actually did it originally was earlier, in early 2018, I read about the Obama Center, you know, filing, building a center, the Obama Foundation, I should say, building a center in Jackson Park. I was very familiar with Jackson Park because I went to the University of Chicago College and Law School, and I was kind of offended by the fact that the University of Chicago was offering Jackson Park, which is a public Chicago park, and also, by the way, happens to belong to a little portion of it, belongs to every single citizen of the state of Illinois, which gives me, as an individual, standing to file this lawsuit, even though I do not live in right next door to Jackson Park.
Well, Charlotte, the park, here's, so I'm neutral on this. I know this story's been in the news for a while. A lot of us are following it, but not that closely. Now it's taken an interesting turn, and we're paying a little closer attention. Jackson Park is about 500 acres. The proposed center would take just less than 20 of them. So so that's one way to look at it. Another way is look at how much good it would do the South Side in that it would employ a couple thousand people and pump maybe $500 million into an area that folks ain't pumping money into. So the question becomes, why would you fight that?
Okay, well, first of all, let's talk about the 19.3 acres. first of all, when you have 500 acres or 550-some acres, it is a public park. There was no vote given to the city of Chicago's residents as to whether they wanted to turn this into part of it into a private center. So this was done by fiat by the mayor of Chicago. Other places might have a vote, and people could vote whether they wanted this to happen or not.
So if it was 1 acre or 500 acres, it doesn't matter. It's the fact that it's a public trust.
Exactly. It's a public park, and the public parks have a certain role in our society. They, and in fact, the Olmsted, the famous, revered landscape architect who designed Jackson Park, he actually used the word park to equate the word scenery. For him, those two words are interchangeable. And he created Jackson Park with specifically with Chicago residents, if people read his materials, in mind, for people to have a place to go when they were exhausted from the toil of working in the city, the grim city. They would have a place to go that had trees and flowers and bushes and shrubs and lagoons and all these natural elements. Now, here's the thing about just 20 acres. Once you start taking 20 acres, 5 acres, whatever it is, out of a public park without asking the citizens, even if they want to do it, just by order of Judge Mr. Emanuel, the mayor of the city of Chicago, and ordering his city council and everyone else how to vote, you then start a terrible precedent, which the next time someone else wants to build his private center, because this is a private enterprise, by the way. This is not the NARA, the National Administrative Office that runs the
public. Are you really worried that it would set such a precedent?
Absolutely.
That the next time somebody comes by with a Walmart or a George Lucas Center, that we would have to grant it to them?
No, no one has to do it, but next time somebody comes by with the prestige and of somebody like President Obama, let's say Mayor Emanuel decides he wants to have his center in Jackson Park, or perhaps there'll be another president elected from here, or some luminary, some fabulous person who everybody adores and loves, and he'll want to have his center built in Jackson Park or some other park, and everyone will say, no, you can't do that, and then he'll say, but you did it for Obama, why aren't you going to do it for me?
That's a red herring too, isn't it? I mean, I can see how you could easily be cast as someone who doesn't like Barack Obama.
Not at all.
And
I want the center in Chicago. I want it. But here's the thing. You talked about, this segues right into your second issue of jobs and economic
Let's do this, Charlotte. I keep cutting you off only because I've been watching the clock more closely than you have. Let's do this. It's 1:30. I'm going to pause for the news.
Okay.
And then I'll give you a little more time on the other side. Is that okay?
It's fine. I'm just enjoying this no end. Take your time.
You're You're enjoying this to no end.
No end. Well, I didn't mean it like that. Many ends.
Well, but I think it's good. I'm glad, you know, you're serving a purpose here, and it's helping me tremendously. So stay right there, okay?
I will. Thank you.
Charlotte, stay right there.
I am.
Thank you, Steve Bertrand. It's 1:39.
Saturday, here in the park, I think it was the 4th of July.
Phil Vitel is the restaurant critic of the Chicago Tribune. Phil, we're finishing up a conversation we're having about that Jackson Park Obama Center. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've got anything to say about that. They want to put that Obama Center
right.
in Jackson Park.
I'm of two minds. I understand why they want that location because it kind of ties into the whole museum complex sort of thing, and it makes it a lot easier to have a centralized area and of going to the economic benefits. But on the other hand, I do understand people's point saying this is a commercial enterprise and we've got a rule and maybe we should follow the rule and maybe we should
explore
alternate sites.
But I don't think of it as a private or commercial enterprise, but I guess technically it is.
Mm-hmm.
Brenda said this to me yesterday, though, because all along, I've been thinking, that would be so good for that area. It'd be good, so good for Chicago, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. She said, yeah. How would you feel if the part of the walkway along the lake and the green space there that we go to all the time, that you swim in, that we walk the dog on, if they said, it'll be better for everybody if we put up a 20-acre thing here and we tear it up for a few years, and then it'll never be the same space that we've enjoyed. I said, I wouldn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went, oh,
yeah,
that's my little epiphanous
moment.
A lot of
it is whose ox is being gored. I do understand that the impact of the Obama Museum, and that's not really the term for it, but
yeah.
would be greatly enhanced if it were part of the museum campus, and then you could go back and forth between all of them rather than you say, oh, we're just as effective as in a remote site that the University of Chicago owns. Well, I don't think it will be, actually.
Charlotte Adelman is the plaintiff who has initiated the lawsuit against the city. She's one of the four. She's an individual citizen who knows her rights and is fighting for them. And we're finishing our conversation with her, Phil, so let's just let her jump in here.
Sure.
Charlotte?
Yes?
Okay, so that's where we are right now. You were going to talk with me after the break about the economic impact, but just comment on what Phil Vitel and I have been saying.
Well, I think it is the economic impact that is so significant here. I mean, you can talk about being part of a museum complex, but that's sort of like not really the issue. What's more important? There's two things that are important. One is this is a park. And as the amicus briefs that were filed in this case have proven, no park has ever been given up, no park space has ever been given up for a museum. All those museums were there before the parks were created, or else they were built on pre-existing structures. So that museum complex is, as you said, a red herring or something like that. As far as the economic benefits, Jackson Park, as I'm sure anybody knows who's been there, is not an area that is going to be accessible for economic development. It is a remote area. They're going to build a 450-car underground garage because people will have to drive there into the garage in order to get to this center. And when they get done looking at Michelle Obama's dresses and the materials from Mr. Obama's campaign, which is what Mr. Obama says is the only thing that's going to be in that center, because all of the actual materials from the administration belong to the federal government, are going to remain boxed up and in different federal depositories because Mr. Obama opted out of NARA, so this is not a presidential library. That's after they see that kind of meager pickings, they will then go back to their cars and drive out, and they will drive somewhere to get lunch or whatever, and it's not going to be in the area because there's nowhere to build around Jackson Park. I've been there. It's apartment buildings.
I go through there a lot, and I know the area that we're talking about.
Okay.
And I don't argue with you. You know, I'm thinking about Wintrust. I'm not thinking about Wintrust. I'm thinking about Guaranteed Rate, where the White Sox play, and I'm thinking about the United Center. And while I'd say the United Center is seeing a little bit more commerce going in that direction. I don't know if it's because of the United Center. Maybe that helps. The point is, neither of those have been great economic engines for revitalizing those immediate neighborhoods.
Well, that was by design, however.
What do you mean by that?
I meant that the owners of the major tenants of those stadiums wanted it built in such a way that they would get the lion's share of any and all concessions.
Interesting. Well, but I'm wondering, too, if, because I say, well, and then think of all the other businesses that will be attracted to this multi-million dollar facility. I think you do have a point here, Charlotte. That
I have another point I'd like to make.
Oh, okay.
I get a lot of comments on this website, you know, for the lawsuit. People write me very poignant messages, of course, some very horrible messages. I even had to go to the police and ask about one of them, but that's beside the point. But one guy wrote me that he sits on his stoop and he looks out at all the people around with their guns shooting everybody and all the weedy lots that he's looking at and all the tenements that are boarded up. And he just is very angry at me because I'm preventing him from having the Obama Center in Jackson Park, which is going to revitalize the neighborhood. So I ask Mr. Obama, why don't you build your center in the neighborhood? Build it on some of these weedy lots and destroy some of those derelict buildings and build it right there so people don't have to drive into a 450-car garage but can simply walk down the street, enter the building, and avail themselves of the benefits that are undoubtedly going to be offered.
I
and not make it into a tourist place, but make it into a place for the community.
Charlotte Adelman is the plaintiff. Can you tell who initiated the the lawsuit against the city of Chicago for the construction? The judge said that while he didn't agree with all of your arguments, that you do have a case here. That
we
is,
do.
You do have a case for a case.
Yes.
It will go forward. And I'm very interested in your position on this and on the other side. I'm going to call you again, Charlotte. I thank you for your time.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it. Have a good day.
Charlotte Adelman. Phil Vitale, restaurant critic, Chicago Tribune.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the People's Choice Awards. Is that what you call them?
Reader's Choice. 2 weeks ago, I came out with my dining awards, recognizing what I believe to be excellence in the
we talked about
restaurant
them.
Community. Right. And now it's the – and at the same time I did that, we told our readers, now it's your turn. And we gave that there are different categories you can vote in, and it's online, and want to see what the Reader's Choice is for best new restaurant or the best old school restaurant. Or
what's your definition of an old school restaurant?
Well, the nominees we put forth for that included Candlelight, which is way up in the north side in that bowling center, Clara's, which is an Italian pasta specialist in the western suburbs, the Diner Grill down south, Gale Street Inn in Jefferson Park, the Green Door on Orleans, Manny's Delicatessen, the Pearl's Place, Valois in Hyde Park, Village, the cuter of the three restaurants in the Italian Village. The Village is the upstairs one with the twinkly Italian lights and all that, and also Tufano's, also known as Vernon Park Tap. In the Tri-Taylor
those are the old
area.
School nominees. So, in each of these categories, does the Tribune tell us here's the ones to pick from, or can I write in something?
No, we don't have a write in function this time.
I think that's just as well, because then it'd be spread too thin.
I'm afraid there'd be a 15 way tie for third with one vote each.
Something like that. You do have, I'm pleased to see that you do have the best Instagram.
Yeah, most Instagrammable restaurants and places that just have. Great, like Bang Bang Pie and Biscuits, we thought of, and the bakery at Fat Rice, which is, I mean, just these great little places to that great pizzeria, Bibu.
But Instagrammable means, I presume, it's a good restaurant or good enough, but it's the view. It's the, you've got this one place where you get your picture taken and you post it. And
right. Well, it's the pictures of the food. Because if you go on Instagram a lot, people are taking pictures of what they're about to eat. There's a whole lot. There's like gazillions of those.
Yeah, but I thought it would be the backdrop, too. It's not just the food on the plate or the table, but maybe the twinkly lights of the bar or the view out the window
right.
of the city.
It could be. And the ones we'd have, for instance, Tide House. Very, very, very pretty Lakeview restaurant. But I really like the way... the food is. I like how pretty everything is. Debbie Gold's food, but yes, also the dining room itself is very pretty, and the bar.
Do you have the list?
Do you have
the list of the Instagrammable?
Right, the Instagrammable would be Bang Bang Pie and Biscuits, the bakery at Fat Rice, the pizzeria Bibu, Tide House, which I just mentioned, and Werewolf Coffee, and there you will be really taking pictures of the fantastic. Foam work by the baristas.
Right. Yeah.
I mean,
in the heart shape or whatever.
Right. Yeah. The Sistine Chapel. It's amazing what some of them can do.
Do they really?
No.
I
got at it, but the coffee was freezing by the time he was finished.
The Mona Lisa. They redid the Last Supper in foam art on the top of my coffee.
I do one of those 3D, you know, seeing eye things. You have to stare at it long enough, and then suddenly it's a violin. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so what is the category that you're excited about? So we did Instagrammable, we did old school. What's one that you know the listeners are really going to react to?
Well, I think that Best Mexican is going to get a lot of votes, and we sort of had a thumb on the scale a little bit in that we didn't put in some of the huge names. We tried to spread it out amongst it. So it is actually a Bayless free zone, for want of a better phrase. So there didn't
a Bayless
put
for, free zone.
Right, I didn't put Shoko in there. I didn't put in. You know, we didn't put.
Oh, that's interesting. Right,
Frontera Grill. Right, because he's the big dog in town. He's just going to win it anyway. So let's see who else. So we have a Birrieria Zaragoza down in the back of the yards, Canaryville area. Carnitas Europa. La Chaparita, we have Minas, and Mitocaya Antojeria.
Did you do suburbs? You mentioned
no,
one of the restaurants in the suburbs. Friends of mine were at V in Western Springs again just
place.
Recently. And so we have been there on and off for several years. We don't live near there anymore, and it's a pricey restaurant. And so when you go back to a place you haven't been to for years, you wonder, okay, is it going to hold up? It did. They just said they had a great time. V-I-E-V in Western Springs.
One time my wife and I just went there, and we just pulled up a seat at the bar, got a couple of appetizers, and let them make some cocktails, because the cocktail program is terrific there.
Every time we go there, or friends of mine do, that we're reminded of that, because we usually just have dinner. We have never gone there and sat at the bar and just noshed, but that's a good place to do that,
too. It really is.
And too many of the, I think, suburbs don't have a place like that.
No.
Just a good pull-up bar with some really good food.
No. I mean, they have the big sprawling ones, and they have, you know, the guys just pouring beers, just pulling handles and that. But for an actual place where you can sit down and it's refined and you can have a really custom-made cocktail, it's nothing like it.
I got a couple texts for Phil Vitale. You may have a call as well or a question. You can call 312-981-7200. The Reader's Choice Awards. Mm-hmm. Give us another category, and we'll pick up a phone line and read a couple of texts next on WGN. 154, a letter to the editor a few days ago said, I wore a MAGA hat to the auto show. Here's what happened. Did you hear that conversation we had yesterday with the guy that wrote that letter? He came into our studio. We had a terrific conversation. After he left, we got a ton of text messages, many of them asking a version of the same question. So we called him before the show today. He couldn't join us again. And we said, would you just answer a couple more questions about your experience and your thoughts? He's a really nice guy. That fascinating conversation. Part two at 2:40. Where will you be in about 45 minutes? Phil Vitale is the restaurant critic at the Chicago Tribune. We're talking about the Reader's Choice Awards. How many more days to vote in this?
You have until 11:59 p.m. today.
So go to chicagotribune.com/dining?
chicagotribune.com/vote-dining-awards. One long word.
Vote-dining-awards. Sounds like kind of fun. Click away. By the way, one of our texters just sent this in. Has Mr. Vitale reviewed Lou Canellis' new restaurant, Avli?
Avli.
Avli.
Greek restaurant in Lincoln Park. Very pretty, very cute. And I was working on that review this morning, actually, and it will be in the paper a week from today. So this man is a mind reader, or he saw me eating the Greek lobster and spaghetti dish last week or something.
You're not going to tip your hand here?
I will not.
Yeah.
We only get a buck a copy. I mean, I have to keep the suspense going.
So next Wednesday?
Next Wednesday.
In the Chicago Tribune, a Greek restaurant. But is that the sportscaster Lou Canellis?
That is the sportscaster Lou Canellis. He's one of the three principal investors between the chef owner and another gentleman.
Greek restaurant, huh?
Yep.
I was just thinking, my wife and I were talking about restaurants the other day. I want to find a couple of Mediterranean places that I know and like and can consistently count on the food. Do you have any suggestions? Mediterranean?
Well, a lot of places do Mediterranean. I would say that that Debbie Gold's Tide House, which we mentioned before, would certainly qualify. I actually like Pacific Standard Time because while it's all California-focused, years ago I talked to a very famous chef, Joyce Goldstein, and she always was of the opinion that California was a missing piece of the Mediterranean. It was technically a Mediterranean country that somehow jarred loose.
Tomatoes, fresh vegetables, chicken.
The olive oil, the same kind of focusing.
Wine.
So, Yeah. So she always said that's the missing Mediterranean countries.
Yeah, I'll keep that in mind. California might be, if that's the motif, that might just scratch my Mediterranean itch. I got a minute left. Any other categories that are especially hot for you?
I'm tickled with the best airport food category. You know?
I don't think it's bad at Midway. Is O'Hare good too?
Yeah, well, our nominees are Arami, the sushi place that opened in Midway late last year, Publican Tavern, which I believe is in Terminal 2 at O'Hare, Summer House Santa Monica, which is right next door to that one, Tortas Frontera, which is Rick Bayless's place in Terminal 1 at O'Hare, and Wicker Park Seafood and Sushi Bar, which is a very strange name. It's called Wicker Park. It's in O'Hare. It's actually between T1 and T2 on the walkway in between them, and it's a pretty respectable sushi place.
I'm really happy to see you do that category because a lot of us get to the airport early enough. You're walking around. You could get a McDonald's. You don't want to do that. If you got an hour and $1,000, you might as well have a glass of wine and take a break at the airport.
Right. And also, you might be on time for your flight, and your flight isn't. That's been known to happen at O'Hare once or twice.
Imagine that.
You got an extra 90 minutes, so might as well get some sushi.
What's the name of the... So go to chicagotribune.com/...
Vote Dining Awards. But if you go to chicagotribune.com/dining, there's going to be a button you can click on.
You'll find his reviews there.
That's till midnight or a few minutes before.
Yeah, no kidding. And then next Wednesday, your review, you'll have to come by and talk to us about the Lou Canellis place.
That would be fun.
Phil Vitale, thank you, sir.
My pleasure.
Nice to see you in the studio.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Every day.
Here's John Williams.
11. Mm-hmm. We're in the Allstate Skyline studio. Where are you? Remember, you can always call in or text in 312-981-7200 on social media. I'm WGN King John. Look for us there. We're in the studio till 3 and Saturdays 10 to noon. Remember, our podcast is called... The Mincing Rascals. The Mincing Rascals. We'll record another podcast tomorrow, drop it about 5 o'clock in the evening on Thursday. It'll be some smart people from the Chicago Tribune and WGN Radio talking about a bunch of events in the news. Steve, what was the last story you read about the action figures or comic book?
There's a comic book called Second Coming, and it was going to be published by DC Comics by their DC Vertigo line, which is a little more adult. And it featured Jesus coming down to Earth, being the sidekick to a superhero named Sun Man.
And what happened to this idea?
And there was a backlash of people, hundreds of thousands of people said it was blasphemous, and DC Comics decided to not publish it next month. Now, the creator of it said he asked DC for the rights back. DC gave him back the rights. He said they've been nothing but great. Sometimes comic book writers, he said, have different views than comic book publishers.
There's two TV shows on right now that sort of take a blended view of religion, right? Are you guys thinking of the same shows I am? What's the...
God Friended Me?
Right, God Friended Me.
Okay.
And then the other one where they think they're in heaven, but they're in hell?
Oh, The Good Place?
The Good Place.
Yeah, I think this one's a little different.
Those aren't biblically accurate.
Well, I mean,
but I like the idea that you can sort of have a secular TV show with a religious character. I think that's a whole new frontier. But I also see how if I was a true follower of my, you know, the Bible or however right. I see it, that I would go, yeah, but the Sun Man really isn't there. You can't have that. I mean, I'm not surprised, I guess, is my point, Steve, that there'd
right.
be a backlash.
No, I'm not either. I mean, I think if you were to substitute other gods or religious figures, you know, whether it's Buddha or Muhammad or, you know, I think you'd be understanding there. So, yeah, I kind of get this one. It sounds like it's an adult, you know, comic book, and it will probably find a home somewhere else. But for a staid sort of company like DC Comics, it doesn't work.
But if you said, okay, so we've got an action, I'm sure there is this comic book. It's a comic book featuring Jesus and Noah and Moses, and they're fighting evil and putting the animals on the boat and doing biblical stuff. Work with me here.
Yeah.
There'd be a comic book for that.
If it was a pro-religion sort of...
Sure.
But
yeah.
this one, he's the sidekick to a guy named Sun Man. And I've seen one...
Jesus cannot be the sidekick, okay? He's the Son of Man.
Right.
Or the Son of God.
So, and I see one still and Jesus looking sort of like bewildered, and he's shoving a loaf of bread down a guy's throat.
You're just kidding me about that.
No, I'm not. That's what this. That's
seriously.
What
the,
yeah.
I wouldn't put that in my promotional campaign. I did a series of commercials here one time. It was just a funny little comedic bit, I thought. And it was the Commandments in Stone action figures. And it was a bunch of those, you know, Moses and Noah and all of them with the fast action chisel hammering out commandments on a granite slab and then Jesus doing fun things. And I could just see little action figures for kids. And I promoted it in a series of commercials. It was all fiction, but it was fun. To me,
didn't work that way.
A lot of pushback on the Commandments in Stone action figure set. Actually, it was kind of fun. Some people loved it, some people didn't, but it wasn't worth the hassle after a while, so I stopped doing it. Thank you, Steve Bertrand. It's 210. Hey, look, Bill Conforti's in our studio. Bill, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you. Doing well.
Bill Conforti, what's the name of your company? Cobblestone?
Cobblestone Development.
This is not a commercial, but if you've heard that name before, you know Cobblestone Development advertises on WGN once in a while. You guys came out to my house and put in a beautiful deck, and we were thankful for that. You charged me for it, but I thought it was a good investment in my property, Bill.
So thank you for the opportunity.
That's the commercial for you, but really, this is not a commercial. It truly is not. But Bill reached out to me and said, hey, the National Italian American Sports Hall of Fame, you're on that.
Correct.
Is putting on a night at the fights, and this is for youth in Chicago who are in the sport of boxing. You guys have a fundraiser fight night, and that's coming up
Tomorrow night.
The doors open at 6 o'clock. When does the boxing begin?
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock, yeah. This is going to be where again?
It's going to be at the Belvedere, 1170 West Devon Avenue, Elk Grove.
Were you a fighter in your day?
Many years ago.
What weight did you fight at?
112, 118.
Yeah, you're still a fit, wiry guy.
I could still box 10 rounds.
We'd have to. Are there? But I guess there are weight and age restrictions. Like
there's no age. Just weight.
If you're a weight and you're 16, or if you're a weight and you're 36, you're in the same category.
Correct.
I guess
correct.
That's fair. In fact, I'd probably put the money on the 16-year-old instead of the 36-year-old. But I mean, who's teaching people how to box in Chicago?
I've been involved with Hamlin Park for approximately 20 years. We have a great coach there, Mr. Bill Heglin.
Okay, so that's at Hamlin Park.
Correct.
And you guys have a boxing club there?
Oh, yes, correct.
Are there other boxing clubs in the city?
Oh, there's many. The city of Chicago, they have approximately 18 to 20 other parks, which they focus on boxing.
What's the age range of the kids that are in these boxing clubs?
It could be from 8 plus.
8 years old?
Correct.
I got to tell you, Bill, I didn't know about this. Like, I know Little League, and I know baseball and soccer and volleyball for the boys and girls. Boxing is a thing, too, huh?
It's very popular today.
Really?
Oh, definitely.
Is it because the kids are learning self-defense, or it's just a sport? I mean, what's the advantage of that versus other sports?
It is a combination, a lot of discipline, and also they stay fit instead of, you know, watching TV. It's for a good cause.
Do you find these boxing clubs in some of the more challenged neighborhoods? You told me off the air there's one in Englewood.
Correct. The Crusher Club. They're all over, John.
Yeah. So it's, but if it's City of Chicago we're talking?
City of Chicago. The Crusher's not involved with the City of Chicago, but the majority are with the City of Chicago.
Now you're at Hamlin Park, right?
Correct.
What's the name of the club that boxes out of Hamlin?
Hamlin Park.
Hamlin Park Boxing?
Correct.
I see.
Correct.
Okay. And then how many kids are in one of these clubs?
It varies. Not only kids, we have adults that come in and work out.
Is it men and women or just
correct,
guys?
Men and women.
Really?
Yes.
You know, is it, I guess they wear the headgear then so they don't get their brains bashed in?
True.
I mean, isn't that a concern these days? I mean, we're worried about kids playing football, let alone boxing.
They do not. The judges and the referees do not take any chances, especially in the sport that I participate in, with the younger people. They will stop the boxing immediately if somebody cannot defend themselves.
They wear headgear?
Yes, they do.
Yeah. You were telling me off the air also that this... one of the clubs has produced an Olympic champion, is that right?
Correct. 1996, David Diaz, we sent them to the Olympics. He became world champ. He held the championship for a couple years until he totally thought Pacquiao in his prime.
Well, there's that.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so now what can I do to help these kids and these clubs in the city?
Just come on over tomorrow night and support the event.
I'd be really curious to see what that looks like. So then they say, so they're now at 113 pounds, here's Joe and here's Bill and,
correct,
and ding, ding, ding. And then how many rounds do they fight?
Three two-minute rounds? 2 minute rounds.
Yeah. Is it? I've been told that that's really exhausting. You say, hey, you're only going to fight for 6 minutes, or say 2 minutes for 12 rounds, 24 minutes. That's not very long, but that really is exhausting.
Yes, it is. There's pressure. That you want to win is number one. And the third round, it's usually the hardest, especially when you just started boxing. The more seasoned boxers, they go really easy first and second, then they go all out in the third round.
And I suppose if you are in the third round and you know the clock's ticking down, you that's probably when you would get careless, right? Like you're dropping your guard and you're throwing haymakers, trying to score a point. But that's when you're vulnerable too, right?
Correct. But the good fighters, they do not do that.
They do not do that.
No,
they're learning the discipline
of
boxing.
They don't want to get hit.
Yeah, I don't want to get hit. I don't want them to get hit.
Yeah.
So then points are scored when you hit them in the stomach, hit them in the chest, hit them in the nose.
Right.
That sort of thing.
Right.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, so to get tickets to this, how do I do that?
Well, you will call Shannon at 312-226-5566.
312-226-5566. This is at Hamlin Park, Belmont and Damon?
No, this is through the National Italian Sports Hall of Fame.
Okay, but the event I'm going to go to Thursday night.
It's the National Italian Sports Hall of Fame. We pulled boxers from all of these different clubs.
Well, where is the fight going to take place?
The fight's going to take place at the Belvedere in Elk Grove.
Belvedere. Oh, there it is. Yeah, on the West Devon, right?
Correct.
Belvedere Events and Banquets, 1170 West Devon Avenue,
correct,
Elk Grove Village.
Okay. Correct.
So that's in Elk Grove Village tomorrow,
correct,
night. 312-226-5566. There's food, beverage?
Correct, yes. Yes.
And then you watch them fight for a couple of hours.
It's going to be a great evening. Also, we're going to have Ray Boom Boom Mancini. He was a world champ in 1982. Also, we're going to have Bobby Chess. He was also a world champ. He became champ in 1986. So two great fighters, and Boom Boom's very popular.
No kidding. Wow. Okay, the Amateur Boxing Tournament tomorrow night. It's the 10th annual National Italian American Sports Hall of Fame. Elk Grove Village, and that's tomorrow night. Doors open at 6 o'clock. 312-226-5566. Well, good for you, man. This sounds like fun.
Thank you so much for inviting me, John. Appreciate that.
And I'm excited for the kids. You know, I think everybody's got a sport or an art or an interest, and sometimes it's not tapped because there's nobody there to give that kid an instrument or a paintbrush or a basketball or a set of boxing gloves. And if that's that's valuable to these kids, if it teaches them discipline, and if it's something that, son of a gun, they're good at, what a shame it would be to not tap that if they don't have the resources.
You're right.
Somebody's got to do that. Someone's got to step up and help out.
Please join us tomorrow night.
Thank you for the invitation. And let's all spend some money there, too, now. 312-2. What's it going to cost me to get in the door? On Friday, we do the Bright Side. That's where you call in or text in. Tell us some good news in your world while you are smiling, and then we smile with you. By the way, Al, if you're looking at me curiously, I got a minute here, too, right? Next break's in a few minutes. 27? That's good. Okay.
Yeah. I'm not trying to say anything to you with my eyes.
With your eyes, I thought you were saying, "Hey, dummy, you've got a," and I didn't know what a is. Let me finish this thought about the Bright Side. So we're going to, on Friday, as we always do at 2:40, do the Bright Side. You call or text in. If you like me on Facebook, I'm WGN King John. Right now, we've posted the new pin that we're handing out to some of the folks that call or text in or message in when we do the Bright Side. And it's really terrific. It's a nice bright orange and yellow pin. And you can wear that wherever you go. Folks might ask you about it and you'll tell them what your bright side is. Or not. You can also share it with your friends. We'll give you two, I think. Are we clear on that? Are we giving out two of those things, Elif, the bright side pins? Did you look into that?
Right. I need to talk to Sarah about that. But last I checked, we're giving away a number of them. And She didn't mention the two to me.
She didn't mention the
yesterday.
Two. I think that would be a good idea.
So
I hate to get all Lou Manfredini on everybody and tell everybody how to do their business while I'm on the air, but that would be a good idea. But anyway, so you get the pin. Some of you will when we do the Bright Side on Friday. And we're asking you already to tell us what your bright side is. And many, many, many of you are doing so. And it's kind of fun to read on a gray day like this what people's bright sides already are. And then we'll do the usual segment on Friday. One other story that I don't know much about, Steve, because they just issued a one-sentence statement. But the latest on the Jussie Smollett story, Steve, is that the attorney in Cook County is recusing herself, right? And she just issued this one-sentence statement, which I thought I had in me, and I realize right now I don't. But
right. Kim Fox has stepped aside and is having someone else look at it.
Why?
I think they said it was because of a relationship she had, something like that. So perhaps she's acquainted with a witness or something to that effect. So,
yes.
I mean, it's not as if her office is stepping aside, but just that she herself, Jeff Sessions, won't be, you know, directly involved, but someone else will.
Exactly. In an abundance of caution,
right.
They are going to recuse, or she is recusing herself. They'll continue. So an associate of hers, her deputy, will go ahead and prosecute the case or look into it. But I'm like, what does Kim Fox have to do with this?
Well, she would be overseeing. She could approve charges if they go short of a grand jury.
I understand
like that.
But what does she have to do with Jussie Smollett or those two knuckleheads?
We don't know that.
Daryl and Daryl, as they will now be known.
By the way, I was going to say that. Well, I will say it in the headlines too. But we're just learning that lawyers for Smollett did talk to prosecutors today. He did not. He did not talk to police. But there was a conversation between the two camps earlier today.
Someday we're going to know this whole thing. So I think I kind of had it figured out yesterday. Okay, so I do believe the version that ABC and CBS have been reporting that Smollett hired them. None of this, I believe this. It's not logical, it's not smart, and it didn't work maybe. But he hired them to ostensibly rough him up so he could claim that he was the victim of a hate crime, and that would get him more attention since he didn't get the attention he thought he deserved when that ugly letter came into Empire's TV show. Now, there's a million sort of logical problems with that, but that I was believing yesterday was the scheme, and that maybe the Cook County State's Attorney's Office is going to look into that. And then you pick up the paper and listen to the radio, and they say, well, actually, she's not going to lead the case because of out of an abundance of caution, she wants to distance herself from it. Well, what? What now? It's hard to anticipate where this story goes.
Well, it will be one of her assistants or someone else in her office will head up the case case.
Right. If there is a case. You know, a couple of weeks ago, I said, you know, let's be done with this. So if we find out that this thing is a hoax, I don't know, maybe bill him for the hours, but let's just get this thing out of the news and get this thing out of the way. But that doesn't seem to be happening very quickly. Nancy, you wanted to say what you're on WGN. How are you? Hi, Nancy. Are you there?
Hi. I just have a couple questions. I'm going to play the devil's advocate. I understand that everybody now is thinking that Jussie did this and it was a hoax and the letter and everything. What if, just what if, these two guys planned it?
The two guys planned it.
What if they sent the letter? What if they thought for some reason they have an agenda and they have a vendetta against him?
Right.
What if they have planned this whole thing? That, to me, is unbelievable. Nobody has even brought that up. But what if they did this? What if they're lying to the police, not Jussie?
Right, so they did this just to terrify him because they're mad at him. They've got some vendetta. And
right.
So they're going to send
right.
a letter, and then they're going to beat him up and pretend like they're somebody else. Boy, that's...
What I'm saying is they really have it all in their hands because you have two brothers, and they're going to agree on everything, and they're going to say everything, but what if they're jealous of him because he had,
right.
you know...
And then when they get caught, they tell the police when they get caught, well, this was Jussie's idea, but that's not true.
Exactly.
It was their idea.
And he'll never be in any he'll never play a part anymore. His life is over.
Kind of a roll of the dice there with the whole MAGA country thing when it's a couple of young black men, though. I mean, those aren't the people.
But if they plan this whole thing, I mean, first of all, who does something like this for $3,500? It's unheard of. You're going to make some money. He makes money.
I'll tell you what, Nancy, well, that makes as little and as much sense as anything
exactly.
I've heard so far.
Exactly.
All right. Nancy, I got to go.
Thank you.
Keep me posted on your other theories, too. What time does our coverage of the Marquette game begin this evening?
8 o'clock tip-off. It's a late game. I don't get that, you know?
Yeah, well, late for some of us to go out, I'll tell you.
Don't give me that garbage. I'm here before you.
Steve Bertrand and Lou Manfredini are getting together tonight to watch that game at a bar in town that's featuring Marquette, their school, against my favorite school, Butler.
And we wanted you to go. The idea was the three of us were going to go, the three amigos.
Yeah, we're best buddies, the three of us. That would change, I think, if all of us were in a bar watching that game.
But why would you say that? Because I don't care. If Butler wins, you know, good for you, good on you.
I'm not a good sport about this.
Don't best buddies invite each other to their Super Bowl parties, though?
I love
that's
you.
Old news.
Well, thank you for the reminder of that, Jen. Yeah, yeah. See how that worked out.
I just think it's adorable when you guys talk about sports.
Well, I like my basketball team, and I like college basketball, and Steve feels the same way about his team, and they're playing each other tonight, and they're in the same conference, and Marquette's real good this year.
But you're tortured by your favorite team. Your favorite team tortures you.
Yeah, they do. They absolutely do. I have such high hopes, and now I've been falling in this slow free fall this season. It's not all that I thought it would be, and yet they're tantalizingly close to maybe making the NCAA tournament.
And they're playing in the Horton Fieldhouse. Is that what it's called? What's it called?
It's in Indianapolis?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, no kidding.
Oh, maybe you're going to come out now, huh?
Well, we play well at home.
Sure.
No, I'm not going to go with you guys because I just don't watch these things well.
I'm bringing a buddy to replace you because...
Fine. I'll tap out. So, moving on. Yesterday, we interviewed a guy named Randy Rossi. He wrote a letter to the Sun-Times, and it was the story about him wearing his MAGA hat with a buddy, the president's Make America Great Again hat, to the auto show in Chicago last week. He did it specifically to see what reaction he would get, and he said to support those kids from Covington Catholic High School who a week or so wore their hats out to Washington, D.C. There was the video about them. In fact, one of those students is now suing the Washington Post because they said the coverage was unfair. So that story is actually in the news, and even though it broke several weeks ago, at the auto show a couple of weeks, you know, just last week, these two guys decided we're going to wear our MAGA hats in support of those kids. It was a sort of silent protest about the way they were treated because maybe they did or didn't support the president. And so he came in and we talked about what that experience was like. He said that he wore the hat not just because he supports Donald Trump, although he voted for him, not in the primary, but in the general election. But he didn't wear it so much as a symbol of support for Donald Trump, but for America. And here is Randy Rossi's view. We should support the American president, whoever it is. We're all in this together. It's the presidency. Okay, that was the end of the conversation. We had a nice time. Afterwards, a bunch of you texted in. I asked him earlier today if he would record a conversation with us, responding to some of the text messages that came in about his little experiment at the auto show, and he said...
Okay.
630 said, John, your guest says he supports the president, even if he does not agree. You did not ask if he supported Obama or Clinton. What's your reaction to that? Would you have worn a, you know, hope and change or whatever Clinton's hat was?
What I would do, in fact, I did do while President Obama was in office, is I did wear T-shirts and things that said USA and Proud American and things like that. I did do that. And while I did not vote for President Obama and I disagreed with him on many things, what I would do is if I ever saw a pro-Obama person who had a hope and change hat on that was being attacked by conservatives, I would have stood next to that person and I would have defended them, not because I agreed with them, but because he has a First Amendment right to express his opinion. And no one has a right to attack someone just because they have a different agreement or different point of view.
But when you wore the MAGA hat, that's allegiance to the president. When Obama was president, you'd say you'd wear an American hat or flag. You see the difference here. You're wearing a MAGA hat, not a USA flag.
Well, you know, I guess I would disagree with that. You know, when I wear a MAGA hat, it's not necessarily a very strong, although I do support President Trump on many things. I view a MAGA hat as being pro-American. I'm for America. I didn't wear a hat that says I'm a Trump fan. I wrote a wore a hat that said make America great again. Now, if someone interprets that as a pro-Trump, that's okay. I would never accost someone or attack someone because they wore a pro-Hillary hat or a pro-Obama hat. They have the right. And frankly, I think it's kind of barbaric that people attack anybody who happens to have a different point of view.
I get that point, but I think you're splitting that hair. That is, MAGA is the president's signature hat. It's his campaign hat. You get it from his campaign site. So to say that that's not a hat for the president, it's a hat for America, is I don't think that's entirely fair.
That's okay. I guess it is splitting hairs, but that's how I view it. And but, you know, I am perfectly okay defending not President Trump so much, because he does say things I just don't like his style, but I do agree with most of what he's done, like our taxes and standing strong against China, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So I guess there is a hair there, and I guess I am splitting it.
224 said, MAGA hat wearer, I got the sense that he thinks if you don't support the president, you don't support our country. This is sort of a reverse of what you and I have just been talking about. He said several times, I support our country. But this writer says, because I support our country, I speak out against the president. He violates presidential norms. Let's just focus on the first part of that text. It says, I got the sense that he thinks if you don't support the president, you don't support our country. What's your response to that, Randy?
No, actually, I think I disagree on that as well. You know, while I, as I just said, while I disagreed on President Obama on many issues, I did support him when I agreed with him, and I wished him well for the sake of our country. There were things that President Obama did that I do agree with. There were things that President Clinton did that I agreed with, but there are also things that I disagreed with. And I do agree with your caller on one thing. In areas where I disagreed with President Obama, I would express that with, mm-hmm. with respect. If someone has a disagreement with President Trump on the way he says something, or even on the content of something, well, that's their right, and I respect it.
815 says, John, the hat surprised you, didn't it? I was more offended by the pussy hat people wore. I thought you were I thought you were disrespectful of his, of Randy's beliefs, telling him how you felt and telling him what he shouldn't do. I'm sorry, I guess you're not king yet, John. Boy, I sure didn't mean to be disrespectful to you. I was doing my darndest to be fair and nice to you, Randy.
John, I didn't think you disrespected me in any way. I think you were probing and doing your job. Now, it's funny he mentioned the pussy hat. I wasn't going to say that because I didn't think I could say it on the air. But he brings up an interesting point. Now, I thought those were disgraceful. Do I think those people that wore them had the right to do so? Yes, they do. But that's their right. And so he brought up an interesting point. You didn't offend me in any way.
I enjoyed our conversation. That's why I called you back. 815 says, it amazes me how a positive message such as Make America Great Again on a hat makes people crazy. Kudos for supporting our president. People have lost their minds.
I kind of think he's right. And I think I said that in the interview. What really breaks my heart is, being an old guy, I remember when we could have vigorous and fun debates on politics without anybody getting offended. We were all big people, and that was a positive thing. Today, sadly, tragically, we've gotten to the point where we're getting just, everybody gets so hysterical. But I will say this, what I found when I wore the hat and I got such positive responses, I think the vast majority of Americans are still reasonable. Unfortunately, because of the way the world is and social media, we focus on the extremists on both the left and the right, where I think probably 80% of Americans are still reasonable people.
630 said, John, I'm a business owner, too, and I would never wear a MAGA hat because I know I immediately alienate myself from more than half of my customer base. Did that come up? I guess not, because when the president was campaigning and in office, you are no longer running a manufacturing firm, right?
That's correct, and I think your caller raises a point. I was the a group president of a public corporation. So while I was president, I did not write all the letters to the editor and be as verbal. For the reason he said, I felt it was my duty to my shareholders not to cause pain to the corporation. So I kept those opinions to myself. Once I retired, I then felt I had the freedom to express my opinions.
Two more here, and this is a little redundant, but since it came up a lot, I'll just read it again so you can respond if you like. 630 said, John, please ask the gentleman, if Obama had sold hats, would he have worn them for the country or the love of the country?
I would not wear a hat that indicated I was pro-Obama because I was not pro-Obama, but I would wear a hat indicate that I was pro-America. And when President Obama did things that I felt were good for America, I would support him. I would stand up and support him. But again, I would never accept anybody attacking someone for wearing a pro-Obama hat because that is against our First Amendment.
Are there days when it's hard for you to put the hat on? Are there days you wouldn't wear the hat because, oh my gosh, he did or said this?
Yes. I wouldn't say that the hat, but I do agree. And I said I didn't vote for Trump during the primary because there are times he says things the way he says them mostly. I disagree with. He's a little crude. What I find with there are two President Trumps. There's what he says and what he does. What he says and how he says it, I often disagree with his style. But what he's done in reducing taxes and holding our NATO partners accountable for their promises, et cetera, I do agree with a lot of what he has done.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as Bill Bennett said, sometimes you need a Mother Teresa and sometimes you need a Dirty Harry. And I think right now we needed a Dirty Harry to kind of clean up the mess we have.
Does it bother you how often he speaks untruthfully, how often he lies?
Yes, it does, and I'll tell you why. Number one, I don't like our president being that careless. I don't know if he lies, but I think he is very inartful with his facts. But more importantly than even that, I think it damages his case. He may give a speech where 95% of the content is right on spot. But then he'll say something that draws attention away from the good stuff.
That's got to make his staff crazy. When Beto O'Rourke gave a rally the same day that he was giving a rally in El Paso, the president said, I have 35,000 people and he has 200 or 300 people. And neither of those numbers were true. And he didn't need to lie about that. But then a lot of us focused on that instead of border security. He eggs us on. He knows we're going to take that bait. And we do. But it, I don't think, serves him well.
I 100% agree, and that's my biggest complaint, is he kind of shoots himself in the foot, as I say.
Finally, 708 from our conversation yesterday said, John, could your line of questioning be any more revealing to your bias? Why are you so amazed that someone intelligent and articulate can support our president? I'm not amazed that someone intelligent and articulate can support our president. Too many of our family and friends and people like Randy here are proof of that. But yeah, I'm biased. I don't like the president. I did not vote for him. I'm amazed at people like Randy. But I think a conversation like this with Randy helps me tremendously, and I hope it helps our listeners too.
Actually, I think that commentator was spot on. That was my primary goal. I don't think that I can convince everybody, but I hope at least I gave them pause to think about it. And if I contributed just a tiny, tiny bit to a little bit more respectful dialogue and debates, then I'm very pleased.
Hey, Randy, thanks again for your time. This is the Randy Rossi Show. And
thank you, John.
Let you and I have another conversation like this down the road.
I would love to. I've enjoyed it very much. And again, I don't think you were disrespectful at all. I thought it was a very good dialogue, and you did a good job. So thank you.
Ditto, my friend. Okay, Randy, we'll visit again later.
Take care, John.
Randy Rossi and I from earlier today talking about the conversation we had yesterday, predicated on the fact that he and his buddy wore their MAGA hats to the auto show, walked around for 5 hours just to see what sort of reaction they would get. And he said it was largely positive. By the way, he's written a couple of books out of Grays Lake, Illinois. The Last Man to Live the Real American Dream, P.S., or Postscript. It's the second edition of that that's out. So if you're on Amazon, look for The Last Man to Live the Real American Dream, his story. Lots of texts based on our last conversation with Randy Rossi. Is the MAGA hat guy the same thing as the Packer fan who won the sideline passes? I get it. I haven't spent the time to completely drill down on that, but I see your point. Thank you for that observation. 630 says, would you kindly explain to the students that are suing the Washington Post? It's called the First Amendment, freedom of the press. 708 North Carolina Duke tonight. We were talking about the big Butler-Marquette matchup that some of us are also interested in. And a couple of you reminded me, hey, John and Steve, the Marquette-Butler game's in Milwaukee. Marquette already won at Indy. They won't be at Hinkle or Horton Fieldhouse, Steve. It's in your house. John, about the Randy Rossi conversation you just heard part of, that guy could be my new best friend. Many of you reacting to that. Here's the great temptation when you're having a conversation like that with, say, an uncle at dinner. Every time somebody says something, you could pick that point or that point, or they said that, and you've got a counterpoint, and you will never get your cup of coffee if you do that. At some point, you just have to say that and hear that and then ask another question and listen and learn. That's what I was trying to do, and we don't normally do that on this show. I don't remember the last time I interviewed a MAGA hat wearer. I'm glad I did. He seems like a nice guy. Ro Khanna's in Studio A. Is Anna over there, too? Hi,
I'm
guys.
Here, too. Hey, John.
What's going on?
Well, it's Tom Skilling's birthday today, so we'll have to wish him a happy birthday later.
I have no idea how old Tom is. Tom Skilling is, I'm going to guess. Do we know? Is it public knowledge?
We'll
is he going to say? Is
we'll
it
see if he tells us.
39.
39.
Yep.
He's ageless.
Yeah, no kidding.
Isn't he?
I've always,
totally.
I don't think of Tom Skilling as a person with age. I just think of him as the as
yeah.
Tom Skilling.
He's always looked the same, right?
He's a human.
Always was, always will
right.
be.
Right.
We know the weather because of this thing. It's called the Tom Skilling.
It just is. Right, exactly. And he will always be there. And I believe that, if I'm not mistaken, we'll talk to him about this, but I believe that Tribune Media is actually creating an artificial intelligence version of him. Robot of him that is going to continue on forever at Channel 9
that won't
as the
do.
Weather guy.
That would not do. Would not
I think
be
it
the
might
same.
Do. I think it might do.
If you yell
I
out
would
to
protest.
Your device, go, hey, Skilling, does it then say, well, I'll tell you, and then it gives you the weather?
Yes.
Well, golly, that's one of my favorites. Golly, I love that. He still uses that. It's
yes.
such a sweet expression.
Have you done that, a Skilling off? Have people call in and do their best Tom Skilling or something like that?
Oh, we should. I don't think on his birthday we'll do that.
No.
I think we'll do that on some other.
When he's
some
on vacation.
Right, some other moment. Exactly.
What else is going on today?
We got Willie Wilson coming up this hour. He's going to be in studio with us.
What time is he coming
3:38.
He is my favorite candidate. Doesn't mean I'm going to vote for him, but wow. What
he's everybody's favorite candidate.
Yeah.
That's the funny thing.
Yeah.
He's Bill Daley's favorite candidate.
Well, there was a point in that Channel 11 roundtable they had the other night where Toni Preckwinkle started to interrupt him, and then she sort of put her hand on his knee and goes, oh, I'm sorry. You know, like, oh my.
Right, nobody wants to get in his way.
It would be
right.
so wrong to interject and cut off Willie Wilson.
He's a kind of a kindly gentleman, right?
Yes.
Isn't that the sort of
yeah.
thing about him? He's sort of like everybody wants to pay deference and respect to him.
He's a kindly gentleman who's also given people $50 for a vote.
That's all right. Hey! Let me tell you something.
If he was a different candidate, I think that would be a bigger issue, but that's just me.
How do you think everybody else got elected in this town?
Yeah, they just didn't do it in public.
At least he's honest about it,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. Doing it. Right, he's got the cameras rolling while he's doing it.
I'm now voting for Willie. Thank you.